In the name of God, who ever dwells with us. Amen. Do you really want to talk to God? Do you really want to sit down and have a talk with God? As Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, he had patiently put up with their grumbling. And by the time that they arrived in the wilderness of Sinai, I suspect that he had grown weary. And so God called Moses up on the mountain, and God told Moses, "Look, I'm going to come to you in a cloud, and I'm going to speak to you so that the people can hear you. And this way, maybe they can begin to trust you." So Moses gathered all the people at the base of the mountain, and God began to speak to them in a voice of thunder and lightning. And God spoke to them the Ten Commandments. And when God finished speaking, the Israelites were left trembling in fear. And they said to Moses, "Okay, you speak to us and we'll listen. But please do not let God speak to us anymore, or we might die." You see, their direct encounter with Jesus was enough to last them a lifetime. They realized they wanted a mediator or a buffer. And some scholars claim that this is actually when it all went wrong between us and God. Not the Garden of Eden, not the flood, not the Tower of Babel, but this moment in the wilderness of Sinai, when the people requested that God never speak to them all again. And from this point on, God always speaks through someone. God never speaks to all the people again. And it was just a fleeting moment. I mean, there was nothing really remarkable about it. They watched Moses go back up on the mountain close to the cloud and speak with God. And God starts speaking with Moses and telling him how to form a community and how to ordain priests and how to build the tabernacle. And this goes on for 40 days. And meanwhile, the Israelites were back to the same old, same old. And they grew restless, because this is what they do. They hadn't heard anything from Moses and God, and so they decided that God and Moses abandoned them. And they did the most logical thing. They created this golden calf to worship. I mean, it's an idol. It's something tangible that they can see, not some thunder and lightning from a cloud. With the golden calf, they didn't have to worry if God was present. They could see it right there. So when Moses comes back down from the mountain and he sees them dancing and worshiping around this golden calf, he's angry. And more than that, God is angry. And somehow, Moses convinces God not to smite all of these unfaithful Israelites. He saves God from God's anger, some would say. And in the process, God tells Moses, "Okay, look, you guys got to get moving. You got to get moving back to this, to the land of milk and honey. You can't sit around anymore, but this time I'm not going with you. I'm going to send an angel ahead to prepare the way." And usually angels are good enough for most of us, right? But Moses isn't too sure about these changes of plans, because up until now, God promised to be present with them. And now God is saying, "I'm just going to send an angel." And Moses is upset. We know that Moses and God share this intimate and personal relationship. And we're told that Moses had a tent in the camp that he would go and sit in and talk to God. And this is where Moses is when we hear this conversation that we heard this morning. Moses is in the tent, and Moses tells God, you tell me to lead this people, but you're not going to go with me. I need some help, and an angel just isn't going to do. You promised me, and you promised your people that we would be with, that you would be with us. And God changes God's mind. And God says, okay, I'll do what you ask. I'll go with you. Moses then, I think probably out of his fear that God might abandon him, says, well, God, can I see you? Can I see your glory? Can I see your face? And God says, no, if you see my face, you will die. But there's this rock beside me. And if you'll come in the cleft of the rock, I'll walk past and I'll hold up my hand. And when I let down my hand, then you shall see my back, but you shall not see my face. The better translation of the Hebrew here is not that Moses could see his back, but that Moses could see the place where God just was. Episcopalians, in my experience, tend to avoid witnessing of our faith, giving our testimony. I remember going to summer camp as a kid and being asked to share my testimony. I didn't know what they meant. And so when it got to my turn, I said, well, I pass. We don't do this in our church. And they laid hands on me for a week. These sorts of experience tend to turn most of us off from terms like witness and testimony. I think for a lot of people, it invokes images of revival or altar calls. I'm not sure if all of that seems daunting to us, or it's too much vulnerability, or it's just something that polite people don't do. But witness and testimony is not in our vocabulary. And yet, when I was discerning a call to ministry, the first thing that I had to do was write a spiritual autobiography. And it's this process where you begin to take the events of your life and to pinpoint God's work and God's presence in your life. And you don't just do this in vocational discernment. It's the first thing that you do in EFM. Several people did DOC a few years ago. They called it a lifeline. Some people call it stepping stones or the river of your life. And no matter how many times I've been a part of these experiences, I always come away in awe. Because when we tell our stories together, we see the presence of God in the life of others, and we more clearly see the presence of God in our own lives. You see, this experience that Moses had wasn't just for Moses. If we're really paying attention, we can see the just was of God in our own lives. When we look back at our lives with intention, when we look back at our day with intention, we can see the presence of God. But most of us don't take the time to do that. We're too busy. We have too many devices to check at the end of the day, email and Twitter and Facebook. I'm guilty of it myself. We have too many distractions. At clergy conference this week, four of my colleagues were asked to share their stories of transformation. And the truth is, I never actually really talked to these four people. But after hearing their stories, I feel a deep sense of connection to them. A connection born out of our shared heartbreak and love and grief and loss and pain and joy. And as I thought about their stories, I realized that this kind of knowing is something we rarely do in our society. And the funny thing is, I can't tell you whether they were conservative or liberal or rich or poor or what social policies they support or they don't support. I can't tell you what football team that they cheer for, but I feel like I know them. And in thinking about all of this, I realize that in our society, we've stopped talking to each other about our shared experiences of joy and pain. We've stopped talking about our shared humanity. And I don't know why. It may be that social media allows us to create these images of ourselves, and if we tell our stories, it won't align with that image. So then we just don't tell the stories. It's just because they're really hard conversations to have. But we've stopped having hard conversations. And because of that, we tend to only want to be with people who share our interests and our opinions. The problem is that when we stop having hard conversations and when we lump ourselves into groups with only people who agree with us, we have a harder time seeing the humanity in those with whom we disagree. And it makes it easier to dislike them, or to demonize them, or to hate them. Turn on the news, turn on social media. We are vilifying each other. And yeah, I know that we've been living in polarized societies for all of humanity, but scientists can measure that this nation is more polarized than it's ever been. And I think that's why I'm hearing more and more the questions, where is God? When will God speak? When will God act? When will this end? Has God abandoned us? I think that we've forgotten the wilderness in Sinai, that God doesn't speak to all of us through pillars of cloud and smoke anymore. God speaks to us in presence. And we only know God's presence when we are naming the just was experience of each of our lives. Moses had the courage to tell God, "Look, I need you in my life, and I need you to lead the way." But Moses also had the courage to name the presence of God in his own life for others. That's what made him a good leader. I think that we have the power to change the vilification of each other in our society. If we just have the courage to tell our stories, to share our humanity. For the original definition of courage was to tell the story of who you are with your whole heart. And maybe it's idealistic. Probably is. But if we started with ourselves, if we made a commitment to intentional sharing of our pain and joy just in this parish, I suspect that we could change at the least our corner of the world. Are we willing to name the just was of God in our lives? Amen.